Support for Alaska Public Media On Demand comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, marking nearly 50 years of commitment to operating the Trans-Alaska Pipeline System. More at alyeskapipeline.com.
What's the best path forward, if there truly is one, to finally realizing the long-hoped-for gas line to monetize Alaska's North Slope gas? Alaska lawmakers have been grappling with details related to tax formulas, labor agreements, and liability protections for the state if the developer pulls out of the deal. The governor liked a House proposal, but has called the Senate version a poison pill. Lawmakers have had heated exchanges over certain provisions, and today on Talk of Alaska, we'll hear from two legislators who both say they want a gas line deal, but have vastly different ideas about how to get it done.
Alaska Public Media is all about community. Wear your community on your sleeve with the purchase of branded clothes and collectibles from our online store. Visit alaskapublic.org/shop.
The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters.
Hello, from Alaska Public Media, it's Talk of Alaska. I'm Lori Townsend. A longtime listener in Fairbanks likes to send me archive headlines from the Fairbanks Daily News Miner about past efforts and claims of success for a deal to build a gas line from the North Slope. A story from April of 1969 noted the head of Trans-Alaska Pipeline System, David Henderson, said he expected the 800-mile line to be completed by the spring of 1972. But as most Alaskans know, the long-hoped-for gas line to bring affordable energy to Alaskans and sell to other states and countries is still just a hope, not reality. Are we closer now? If so, why? What's different about this proposal than the more than 50 years of multiple versions of past supposed deals? Here to describe this current iteration of a gas line proposal and where the pinch points are is State Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat. And on the line from Big Lake is Representative Kevin McCabe, a Republican from that region. Welcome, both of you.
Good morning, Lori.
Good morning, Lori.
Thanks so much, both of you, for being on hand with us today. Let's start with perspective from you both about the main pinch points. The legislature has been in special session for weeks, working on different versions of a gas line bill, but most of the debate between lawmakers has centered on property taxes. Why is that? Senator Willikowski, start us off.
Well, thank you, and thank you for having me and putting this on today. The, you know, we as a state, we've been through at least 15 gas line proposals. I think six since in the last 20 years, and so now we have Glenfarne, and there, we're actually on property taxes. I think we've come to an agreement on that there should be property tax breaks. The question now is what other protections should Alaskans be afforded? And so in the Senate version, we included a number of things. We included some liability protection so that if Glenfarne pulls out of the project, if they abandon it, if they miss milestones, then the state does not have to reimburse them. That they've testified to that repeatedly, that the state wouldn't owe them anything at all. And then a document came out that showed, no, that's not actually true. The state could be on the hook for a pretty significant amount of money, the value of which is determined by Glenfarne. So in the Senate version, we put in some liability protection to protect the people of Alaska, because to get out of AGEA, the last failed gas line proposal cost us $327 million that we paid them, and then another $65 million just to get out of it. So we're trying to protect Alaskans by saying, you know what, we want some liability protection if we're going to give you these massive tax breaks, okay? The second thing we wanted was guarantees for Alaska Hire. There was a big press conference, a big photo op where Glenfarne went out, the governor went out and said, hey, we're going to hire Alaskans. We're going to have a project labor agreement. And then the next day, the governor puts out a tweet and says, oh, it's non-binding. And so Alaskans were shocked and said, wait, we thought, you know, we've negotiated for months on this. We thought this was a binding agreement. And so we put in provisions in the Senate version to say we want binding commitments for Alaska Hire. The other thing that we put in was timelines. You know, one of the big reasons for this project is the Hill Corp is refusing to develop gas after 2032. So we put in a provision that, you got to have it finished by the end of 2032. And we think that's reasonable. We think that deals with the situation that we have running out of gas. And then, of course, the other one is the S-Corp provision, which guarantees that the state, when Glenfarne makes a lot of money, the state gets a portion of it. Those are, I think, the main pinch points here.
All right. Thank you for starting us off. Representative McCabe, your thoughts here.
Yeah, well, thanks, Lori. There's been a lot of work on this bill, and Bill and I disagree on several parts of it. I believe what's in there in the clean bill protects Alaskans and gets the pipeline built, and so that's where our disagreement is. You know, yes, Glenfarne hasn't put the full economics out in public, and we're working off summary numbers and DOR modeling. That's a real constraint. And yes, this bill asks Alaskans to accept a restructured tax regime, as Bill said, with consequences over decades. Legislators are right to weigh that carefully, I think. And the shift in what Glenfarne said it needed between 2025 and 2026, you know, there's been all sorts of questions out there that they said they needed this and they said they needed that. And, you know, a bit of that is rhetoric. You know, you talk about your desires and this is what's going to happen. And then all of a sudden your lenders say, well, yeah, that's actually not what we can accept. So, you know, the community impact provisions for the route the borough could use strengthening in conference. We had lots of discussion back and forth about that, and those created some angst initially, and now they've sort of been resolved over the discussion. So, yes, the pass-through entity taxation question, which is what Bill calls the S-Corp issue, is a legitimate policy debate, but it deserves its own serious look in its own bill. And I think everybody's open to that question. We've been listening to Bill talk about it for years, and it is a struggle, and we need to fix that. But it doesn't belong in this bill. Look, at the end of the day, this bill should be a small, simple, 7-page bill that asks the question, can we shift our property tax, normal property tax structure on oil companies to a volumetric tax? That's what Glenfarne said they needed to go to get financing. So really, the conversation we're having, this big, all this angst and all this conversation is supposed to be happening a year down the road as we get closer to FEED. All they asked was, look, we're happy to try to take this project forward. To do so, we need some tax, restructuring of taxes to take to our lenders. And from there, we'll see if it works. But all this, everything that we're doing right now actually belongs further down in the discussion, more downstream. So it's a fair debate, and I think we need to have it. So let's get it on.
All right, Senator Wilikowski. You said this isn't a bill to build a pipeline. Glenfarne could do it now. You said Glenfarne said last year it's economical on its own. We don't need anything from you. No tax breaks. Huh? How did all this get so tense and tangled up since last year? And what are the main things Glenfarne says they need now that is different from last year?
That's a really good question, Lori, and one that we have not fully been able to answer, and one that I think is causing a lot of concern among Alaskans, among legislators, because for over a year, Glenfarne they'd come down to Juneau, and they would meet with legislators, they'd meet privately, they'd come and testify, AGDC would come meet with legislators, they'd testify, and they would talk about this project, and they never mentioned property tax breaks at all. They never mentioned that they needed anything at all. In fact, they said just the opposite. The head of the AGDC, the Alaska Gas Line Development Corporation, said, this is a direct quote, I believe if the legislature gets involved that the project will go away. That's what the former House Speaker, Mike Chenault, appointed by Governor Dunleavy to the AGDC board, said. That was a direct warning. He said, stay out of it, legislature. Just stay away. Don't do anything at all. And now he's writing editorials saying, we got to have tax breaks. You got to have tax breaks. The head of AGDC, a guy named Frank Richards, who runs AGDC, said the same thing. The project's economic on its own last year. We don't need anything at all. And I think what happens is what often happens down in Juneau is they figure the Alaska legislature is kind of a pushover. We can come in and get huge tax breaks and get whatever we want from the legislature, and they'll just do it because we have a history of doing that. You know, there years ago, 1991, a judge found that the state of Alaska was guilty of inexcusable trustfulness of the oil industry. Think about that for a
second. Inexcusable trustfulness?
Inexcusable trustfulness. The oil industry had been filing false royalty reports for decades. And the state of Alaska said, finally, wait a second, something's wrong here. And a judge, actually, on the record, it's a written opinion, accused the legislature and the governor at the time, inexcusable trustfulness, for years. And we have this history in the state of Alaska of just being a pushover, just giving industry whatever they want. They just come in, we don't question it, just give them whatever tax breaks, tax incentives, tax deductions, whatever they need. And here we are as a state, we're broke because of that. Because oil used to fund 90% of our state budget for decades, and now it funds about 23%. And it's because we're giving it all away. And so this is a little bit of a reset here and saying, yep, you know what? Okay, you need tax breaks. We're going to give you tax breaks. But we got to figure out a way to make this more profitable for Alaskans. When you're making huge profits down the line, we want to share that.
Representative McCabe, why do you think Glenn Farm said last year we don't need tax breaks, but now there's a push for a big reduction in property tax and resistance to this S-Corp corporation tax inclusion? Do you think they tried to get financing and couldn't, so are now looking for other concessions?
Well, that's actually right at the crux of the matter, Laurie. I think what shifted between 2024 and 2026 is that the project moved from a concept to actual financing talks. In 2024, they were doing public outreach, and by 2025, they were in the same room with lenders, off-takers, and rating agencies. And those conversations showed, the discussions they had with the finance folks showed, that a 22 or 20 mil property tax front-loaded during construction when there's no revenue and debt service is the highest makes the project unfinanceable and untenable. So the DOR put it in the fiscal note. The White House put it in their April letter. That's the position on record. And, you know, as far as the rest of it, the oil companies, you know, that's not really what we're here to debate. I mean, we can certainly debate that. Alaska is known as one of the most unstable places for oil and gas companies to do business because every time we get in a fiscal pinch, we change our oil tax structure, and the oil companies would rather go to California and other places where there's a higher tax, initial tax rate on them because it's more stable. So that's a conversation worth having, but it's really not part of this bill, I don't think. I think we need to clearly get to a gas line discussion on HB 381, essentially, and the small part of it that this will play in the beginning of the discussion to get to a gas line.
If you're just joining us, this is Talk of Alaska, and today we're discussing the Alaska Gas Line proposal stalemate. In the studio with me today is Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, and on the line from Big Lake is Representative Kevin McCabe, a Republican. Staying with you for a moment, Representative McCabe, you said in an earlier interview that we're making a whole bunch of decisions on a gas line right now that shouldn't come until later. What are those decisions that should come later? Why not now?
Well, there's a ton of decisions and discussions. Right now, there's a real simple question on the table. Can you give us property tax relief and shift to an AVT or volumetric tax and allow us to get financing? The rest of it comes when they come back, because they will come back and say, well, the finance needed this. And one finance person was concerned about the labor in Alaska. You know, they're concerned with labor unions, and you know, have you developed an MOU to use Alaska labor? Those are the kinds of discussions that are a little bit further down the road that we should be having. Certainly, we want to have those discussions, but right now the simple question is, can you give us, legislature, a different structure with taxes to allow us to get financing? And all the rest of this, whether it be the labor union MOUs or the protections or everything else, they should flow from this initial discussion. There's no doubt. And I agree with Bill, and I agree on that for sure. We need to have protections. We need to protect Alaskans, but it shouldn't necessarily start at this bill. We can continue the discussion. We can continue as they get closer and closer to FEED, and it looks more like the pipeline is going to go. I just think that doing all this right now is a mistake. It's just killing the project before it ever gets started. And that, you know, to me just seems nonsensical.
So, Senator Wilikowski, lawmakers also sought guarantees that if there were cost overruns, that expense would not fall on Alaska consumers. Glenfarne has agreed to price caps on what utilities pay for gas. Is that enough?
No, it's not. No. I do contract law. That's what I do in my when I'm not in the legislature. And I know it's appealing to say, well, we'll just fix it later. We'll just go ahead and we'll just come up with a general agreement later. But in my own personal experience, there are so many times when you're sitting at the table with someone and you have an idea of one thing and they have an idea of one thing. And then you say, well, we'll just go ahead and have a simple contract and then we'll fix it later. And then it blows up. I can't tell you how many times. It's like a regular occasion for those that do contract law. Okay. But in Alaska, we have our own experience with this, right? We had Senate Bill 21, the bill that cut oil taxes, and lots of promises made, right? Promises for all this new investment and all these new jobs and all this new production and all this new revenue to the state, and we're going to save the PFD. That was their motto. We're going to save the PFD, right? And none of it. Investment plummeted. Jobs plummeted. Jobs are 40% of what they were, 50% of what they were back in 2013. And so we at the time, we pushed to get those promises in writing, and they said, oh, no, we'll just fix it later. Well, here we are 13 years later. We have $2 billion structural deficits. We have got the PFD gutted. We can't afford education. We've got our schools falling in the ocean because we didn't get it in writing, right? And you can go back to Hillcorp. Hillcorp came to Alaska. They wanted to acquire BP's assets, and they wanted to get legislative approval. Same thing. We asked them specifically, will you agree to pay corporate taxes because you're an S-Corp? They said, oh, if the legislature goes ahead and passes that, we will be a good corporate citizen and pay that. Well, here we are eight, nine years later, and they're fighting it every chance they get. And so you get these things in writing up front so there are no disputes, so that everybody understands the terms. And quite frankly, it gives investors more stability when you have that predictability. You have that contract already written. You have the things that you are agreeing to, the things that you as a state need, you put it in writing. You don't wait, because I can tell you, it's really hard to get it back.
So before I want to stick on that pass-through entities tax for a moment, but I just want a quick aside here. Representative McCabe, you mentioned the White House putting something about the gas line in a newsletter. The Trump administration has stated that it wants to unleash America's energy potential. Should the federal government invest in the Alaska gas line? Representative McCabe, your thoughts about that?
Sure. Well, that's a very interesting question. You know, they have invested in things that the administration has invested in things that they've never invested in before. And I think that it's entirely possible that they could if they wanted to invest. But at what cost? What are the federal strings that come with that if the federal government decides to, say, federalize a portion of it or even buy into it? Is there going to be a cost? Certainly there will be a cost in the revenue that would come to Alaska. So say the government or the feds decide they want to be a 25 or 50% owner. Do we lose 50%? Does the state of Alaska lose that 50% to the federal government? So that could be a cost. It could also be a cost that they want to control maybe the alignment of the pipeline or other things that we might not necessarily want. So it's certainly a possibility. I think it might be a mistake. You know, we would have to look at that on its merits when it came.
Your thoughts, Senator?
Well, the federal government did what I would say is probably unprecedented with this gas line proposal. They have federal loan guarantees. There are currently federal loan guarantees in place that will allow Glenfarne to get a significantly lower interest rate to build this project. And several of us legislators actually met with the energy dominance group for the federal government that's putting this together months ago. And we talked to them about this project. They said, we want to do it. We want to finance this project. And we will give very low interest rates to do that. And they said, but Glenfarne refuses to give us anything. They refuse to give us any financial information, any information about the project. And it really makes you question why. It makes you question, why would Glenfarne reject the federal loan guarantees? They could have gotten them very easily. You've got President Trump saying this is his number one energy project that he wants to see done. And he's got these federal loan guarantees, and Glen Farney is refusing to even apply for them and going out saying, we'll pay billions more in interest rather than go through the federal loan guarantees. And that just sets off some bells and whistles for a number of us in the legislature and for the public in general. Why would they not take advantage of that?
So I want to get to the phones here in a moment, but one more question, Senator, about this pass-through entities tax, that what you refer to as the S corporation tax. Criticism of that tax from business leaders centers on chilling investment in the state. People point to Hillcorp getting much more oil and gas out of legacy fields than the state previously expected. What do you say to that criticism about that chilling effect?
Well, I would say that ConocoPhillips has paid that corporate income tax for decades. Exxon's paid that corporate income tax for decades. BP paid that corporate income tax for decades. Hillcorp, when they came to Alaska and testified in front of the legislature, said they would pay for it. If you look at the investment that Hillcorp has made at Prudhoe Bay, investment used to be around $895 million per year at Prudhoe. A couple of years ago, that plummeted to 10% of that. It was about $89 million. Now, it's up a little bit. It's up, okay, to a couple hundred million dollars, but it's still much, much lower than it was when BP was there. So in terms of chilling investment, look, Prudhoe Bay is a cash cow. They're making rates of return of over 100% there. It costs like $15 to pull the oil out of Prudhoe Bay, and they're selling it for, what, $70 today? Massive, massive profits. You add on the tariffs, that's another $10 to ship it down the pipeline, get it to Washington or wherever they're shipping it. $25 to make $70. That's a pretty darn good profit.
Representative McCabe, your thoughts?
Well, yeah. So the S-Corp tax was designed for one reason. It was designed to give companies like Hillcorp or Hex or other companies the flexibility and the ability to go take bigger risks with the platform in Cook Inlet and drill new wells. There's a reason that ConocoPhillips is a C corp and a different corporation, and some of these more nimble corporations like Hillcorp or others that are. I think that some of the investors, some of the wildcatters in Alaska are all S corp people. So, do we want to stifle that kind of investment? I mean, truthfully, Alaskans did this to ourselves when we did away with the income tax. We would be able to recoup that tax if we had income tax in place. We would be recouping the personal tax or the personal revenue that comes to a owner such as Hildebrand, or we would be recouping that. But that's where the loophole comes in. We did that to ourselves. They didn't do it. They took advantage of it. Sure, probably, but they also took advantage of the ability to be nimble and to do great big things that C corporations just don't want to take the risk of doing. So I think that there is a place for S corps, and I think that there's a better way to mitigate it. But once again, it's a larger conversation that doesn't belong in this bill. This bill should be the simple 7-page bill that was initially issued, and that is, legislature, can you shift from property taxes to volumetric tax and give us the ability to get the financing? We are a nimble corporation. We're willing to take the risk. Alaska's a risky place. 800 miles is a risky thing to do. We know there's 35 trillion cubic feet of known reserves up there. We want to do it, but we need a little bit of help here. And I think that should be the main issue. The whole S corp and pass through is big enough that it deserves its own discussion and its own bill.
All right, let's go to the phones for a moment. Lawmaker Dan Sadler is on the line from Eagle River. Hello.
Good morning. How you doing, Lori?
Good. Thank you for calling.
Thank you. I got a question, and it might be a little bit confrontational. In my experience of watching Senator Wilkowski over the years, he has what I would call a record of antipathy to the oil industry and its interests. And my concern in this debate about the gas line bill, HB 381, is that Senator Wilkowski is pumping out false statements and false information, partial information, lying by omission. He has said that, he said that there's a 30% rate of return on investments in the Cook Inlet, a 100% rate of return in North Slope. He just said a minute ago there are massive, massive profits to be had in North Slope. And he's also said that Glen Farne could build a line right now because it's got the permits. He said the SB 21 resulted in less oil production. My question, Senator Wilkowski, is where the heck do you get your numbers? Don't you understand that finances play a role in this decision? If there's massive profits, why aren't more rangers clamoring to get the North Slope? If there's 200 years of gas supply in Cook Inlet, why is Hillcorp the only company to produce that? I don't understand where you get numbers from and why you use half-truths and innuendo to score political points.
Senator Willikowski.
Thanks, Dan. We're really going to miss you in the legislature next year. I wish you well in your retirement. I get my numbers from the Dunleavy administration mostly and from the experts that we hire. On the rates of return for Cook Inlet, that was a presentation that was done in the Senate Resources Committee where we asked them what the rates of return were for Cook Inlet. And they came back and said for Hillcorp, it was generally 30%. For the 100% rate of return, you don't have to be an expert in math to figure if the costs at Prudhoe Bay are $25 and you're making $60, $70, that's over 100% rate of return. But we also know that we've had independent analysis done by experts over the year, Gaffney and Klein, for example. And the analysis they did a number of years ago showed that the rates of return at Prudhoe Bay were 123%, $80 oil. That was assuming massive CapEx, capital cost increase, massive operating cost increase. So the numbers are, I know you may not like them, but those are numbers from our legislative experts. Those are numbers from the Dunleavy administration. In terms of gas in Cook Inlet, I'm glad you brought that up. There's a 200-year supply of gas in Cook Inlet. 200-year supply. There's 19 trillion cubic feet of gas in Cook Inlet. You know this, Dan. You've been on the Resources Committee. The reason that companies aren't exploring there is because there's no market for it. If they find a massive oil field, they have nowhere to sell it. I'm sure you've heard in your committees, DNR testify that, and DOR and other groups testify that, if they find a huge field, they have nowhere to sell it. They have nowhere to put it in the market. That's the reason you don't have producers coming in and selling it. Now, Glenfarne did take out leases. They control 90% of the leases, and they're refusing to drill. They're refusing to explore. And that's what's causing the gas shortage in Cook Inlet.
Now, explain when you're saying if they find a massive field, they have nowhere to sell it. Well, of course, there's the rail belt. But what you're saying is there's not a big enough customer base.
Exactly. Exactly. And quite frankly, we benefited from this for decades, right? The oil industry came in and they found huge amounts of gas in Cook Inlet. And that's why we had $1, $2 gas for many years. And then they said, look, we can make money somewhere else. And so, you know, if you're Hillcorp and you come into the state of Alaska and you're making a 30% rate of return in Cook Inlet, which is a really good rate of return, but you can make 100% on the North Slope, where are you going to put your money? Where are you going to put your dollars? Of course, you're going to put it at the 100%. The problem with that is that ignores the fact that when you take out a lease in the state of Alaska or anywhere in the United States, you have a legal obligation to explore, to produce, to develop. And the Dunleavy administration has allowed Hillcorp to just sit on their leases, basically, and cause this gas crisis that we have in South Central.
All right, we need to take a break. When we come back, we will continue our discussion with Senator Bill Willikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, and Representative Kevin McCabe, a Big Lake Republican, as Talk of Alaska continues statewide.
Consider a gift of stock to Alaska Public Media. You may avoid paying capital gains tax and receive a deduction. Learn more at alaskapublic.org/stock or contact your financial advisor.
So this question kind of gets at one that we'll go to a caller for here. Some Alaskans might wonder why we don't develop the gas for only Alaska's needs. Why is it important for the project to have two phases, a line for Alaska, then a line to Tidewater for outside buyers? And I think that's probably in line with what Dee in Palmer may be asking. Dee, hello.
Yeah, hi. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Senator Willikowski kind of addressed this a little bit in his last remarks, and I appreciate that. But it wasn't too long ago, I can remember, they were kind of deep six in that gas line because it would be too expensive to justify putting it in because there wasn't really any market for it. That was my understanding. And I just wondered what kind of transpired between now and back then to justify putting it in now. And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you.
Thanks, Dee. And as I said, some Alaskans may be wondering, well, why don't we just get the gas for ourselves? We need it. But of course, that can't work.
Yeah, it's a great question. And so what's changed? A number of things have changed. You know, you have the war in Iran. You have the closure of the Strait of Hormuz, which is blockading 20% of the world's natural gas supplies. Alaska, I support the gas line. I know that's not popular with some people, but I do support the gas line. And Alaska has tremendous advantages. We're close to the Asian market. We have the protection of the United States Navy to ensure that supplies get there. We don't have straits and other challenges that exist in other places in the world. You just got to make it work economically. And the problem with in-state only is you're shipping such small amounts, it's just hard to make it work economically.
Sure, of course. Yeah, it's just not enough money. Representative McCabe, would you like to add some thoughts there?
Sure. Well, first, let's go back to the whole Cook Inlet thing, Laura, if you wouldn't mind. So it seems to me we closed down the Agrium plant because we were running out of gas in Cook Inlet. So that was an export market that went away because there was not enough gas. So, you know, we talked about, Bill talked about the trillions of cubic feet of known of reserves that they think is in Cook Inlet, Remember, each well costs millions of dollars to drill. One in nine is the figure I heard actually produces. It takes 15 producing wells a year to continue to fill up sinks us. So, Cook Inlet's not the safe bet that everybody says it is. On the North Slope, we have 35 trillion cubic feet of known reserves, and we know those are there because we put them there. So what's the better play? Spending millions of dollars a year drilling for gas that we think might be under Cook Inlet? It's not known reserves. It's suspected reserves. We still have to explore for it. So some of those are the issues that I think we're talking about here. The in-state gas line, Alaska just doesn't have the customer base to spend that huge amount of money to build an 800-mile-long pipeline from our 35 trillion cubic feet of known reserves to service just a couple hundred thousand Alaskans, maybe as many as 300,000 or 400,000 if we could spend more money to get the spurs done. But that's not a big enough customer base. So we have to have the export facility tagged onto the back of it, what they call phase two, to pay for the pipeline itself. And we export to our Indo-Pacific allies. Here's the deal. We've let politics strand our energy option for decades. Energy security gets built years in advance through leases, exploration, infrastructure investment, and stable rules, which we don't have in Alaska. That's a national interest in the Pacific. And that's been recognized across administrations, not just this current administration. Alaska holds a big piece of this capacity. Japan, South Korea are treaty allies, and they are only 7 days sail from Alaska in sort of protected waters across the North Pacific. So their energy security matters as much as ours because they are our allies. Otherwise, they're buying gas from Russia and China. Is that what we want to do? We want to drive our allies to Russia and China. So there is a market there. We can access that market. We just need to have the strength to finish this pipeline. And once again, this is another discussion that's pretty far down the road from where this bill and what this bill actually asks and what it does. So,
all right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. I think I'm having trouble seeing the name right now, but I think it's Josh Church is in Fairbanks. Is that right?
That's right.
Hi, sorry. Yes, Mr. Church, you had a question?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
So I think a lot of Alaskans are frustrated because a lot of this discussion deals with issues and central planning that the legislature shouldn't be concerning themselves with. The role of the legislature is not to figure out what's profitable, what invention works, and to run businesses. If we had government running it, Elon Musk wouldn't have created the rockets he's sending into space. We wouldn't have guys like Henry Ford or the Wright brothers' flight. And Alaska is unaffordable right now. The taxes are too high. They've driven out the oil companies, so we're now down with S corps trying to come in and make profit where the big C corps can't. We're 49th in business, according to CNBC. And part of it is because this legislature is trying to squeeze every last drop of taxes out of it. And there's nobody else standing in line to build this. Senator Wilichowski is pretending like if we just keep the taxes the same, them or somebody else will build this. No, they're telling us this project is unaffordable at the current tax rate. So if you give them a tax break and they manage to make it go ahead, great. We will have benefit for the state. We'll have growth. It'll lower the cost of living. If you kill this project by too high a tax rate, nobody else is coming in to fix this. And so a lot of these discussions shouldn't be happening. Just let the private sector do it. You don't have to know everything about that company. Alaska's not putting up the money to do this. And this goes back to first principles. The Constitution of the United States, of Alaska, which we pretend doesn't matter anymore. Article 2, Section 13 says bills should be confined to one subject. So when you're putting in tax bills to change how our oil companies are taxed, along with a tax bill about the gas line, you're violating the Constitution and you're killing these projects.
Okay, let's let the senator respond now. Thank you.
Wow, where do I start? We could spend a whole show just showing how wrong Josh is on so many of these topics, okay? Let's talk about his statement, let the private sector do it, right? That was a direct quote from Josh. I agree, let the private sector do it. Glenfarne can go out and build this pipeline right now. They don't need anything. They've got all the permits, they've got everything. The federal government offered them loan guarantees. They said, no, we don't want them. So instead, now what they're asking is that instead of just letting the private sector do it, which Josh is advocating and others are advocating, they want government to step in and give them a 90% tax break for decades on their property taxes. That's removing the ability of local communities like Fairbanks, like the Matsu Valley, like Kenai, to assess property taxes so that they can hire new police officers, firefighters, fix their roads, fix their bridges, fix their ports. We're taking away 90% of that ability, Josh. And so when you say let the private sector do it, they can do it right now, but they don't want that. They want government, they want socialism. They want to socialize the risk and privatize the profit. And that's what you're advocating for, Josh. And I disagree with that. I disagree. You know what? If the state of Alaska is going to fundamentally give them massive tax breaks, we should get something at the back end. And so when Glenfarne is making $5 billion per year in profits, which is what Dunleavy's Department of Revenue said they will be making when this project is, you know, fully paid off, the state of Alaska should be getting some of that back because we've socialized the risk, because we've given them massive tax breaks up front. We got to make it some way in the back. Otherwise, we're not going to be able to afford education. We're not going to be able to afford to pay any PFD at all. We're not going to be able to fix our roads, our ports, our bridges. And so, you know, I could go on. Look, people say, oh, if you try to follow the Alaska Constitution, how do we get to this place where following the Constitution and maximizing the benefit for the people of Alaska is somehow hating the industry? That's not hating the industry. We understand what the industry does for the state, and we want to work with them. But at the same time, you can't just give it all away, Josh.
Okay, so Representative McCabe, your thoughts here.
Yeah, well, I'd love to respond to that. It's going to take a bit to unpack it all, though. It's not a tax break bill. It's a restructure. The 20 mil property tax gets replaced by a volumetric tax that starts at 6 cents per 1,000 cubic feet and escalates 1% a year. It sunsets in 2040 with a throughput trigger. Calling it a straight 90% cut without the AVT is like talking about a pay cut without mentioning the commission. The math is completely different from what you're talking about. The $5 billion in profits, that's not what DOR said. That's not profits. So let's just dispense with that whole $5 billion number. And frankly, if Alaska buys in like we should, 25% owner, $1.25 billion of that would come to us if that's what you're talking about. Glenfarne still has to pay all their suppliers, they have to pay for the gas, they have to pay for a great number of things. So $5 billion worth of profits is not correct. But here's the biggest thing. The maximum benefit to Alaskans includes gas to Alaskans. That's what we're all forgetting. It seems like people are all focused on what we're going to get from the gas line, what profits, how much is coming to the state of Alaska. Well, what about the people in Fairbanks who are only, and frankly, the people in Anchorage who are only focused on how am I going to pay to heat my house? How am I going to get enough wood that doesn't violate the EPA standards to burn in the wood stove to heat my house? The people in Fairbanks are hurting. They are really, really worried. Their energy price has gone up significantly. And frankly, Anchorage is sitting in the catbird seat right now because Chugach hasn't raised their rates yet. MEA just did. Golden Valley did twice in the last year. So how are we going to call this just focusing on the profits coming from Glenfarne maximum benefit to Alaskans? We must consider the gas that Alaskans need to heat their homes. That's what's driving the out-migration. People cannot afford to live here anymore.
All right, let's go back to the phones for just a moment before we take another break. Matt Halala is on the phone, on the line from Anchorage.
Hello. Thank you. Can you hear me?
Yes.
So I really admire the back and forth. I've met Senator Wilikowski maybe once or twice. I don't know you very well, Bill. I know Kevin quite well. And, you know, part of the thing that we need to recognize over and over again in that negotiation room is that we have a responsibility to the next generation of Alaskans to have an opportunity to live, work, and raise families here and make that their number one choice. We have to get the economy rolling. So it's not about me. It's not about Kevin or Bill. It's not about the legislators themselves. We have to keep reminding ourselves of that responsibility. Cheap and abundant energy is the fertile soil for the seeds of industry. We know that we can get lost in static analysis. Well, it doesn't pencil out just perfect. Here's the thing. I know, Bill, you're a respected attorney, apparently. I've, in business, worked with many attorneys, real estate attorneys, contract attorneys, malpractice, Stark attorneys. The one thing I want when I'm trying to accomplish something is not how a project can't happen. I want to know how we can make it happen. If an attorney gets hung up on how it can't happen, I fire them. They're off the project. We have a responsibility to the next generation. There are many reasons why industry can't just go do things on our terms at all times. It's a negotiation. And frankly, I'm stunned that someone like Bill Walker would think that he provided us such value in the last term that he was in, that he was partnering with China. You're talking about uncertainty of contracts. With the Chinese, the saying goes that when you sign the contract with the Chinese, that's when the negotiation begins. Now, at least our corporations, you know, are bound by law. Their integrity has to be fairly transparent. So anyway, my main theme here is please get to a deal. It's not about how it can't happen. You got to find out how it can happen.
All right. Thank you.
Responsibility to the next generation. Thank you.
Thanks so much for that. We are going to take another short break. When we come back, we'll continue our discussion about the gas line proposal as Talk of Alaska continues statewide. All right. Thanks for joining us for Talk of Alaska today as we're talking about the Alaska gas line proposal with Senator Bill Wilikowski, an Anchorage Democrat, and Representative Kevin McCabe, a Big Lake Republican. Senator Wilikowski, you wanted to respond to that last caller?
Well, I did just want to talk about price of gas, because I know that's one of the critical issues and concerns that we have. And I just want people to understand that low-cost energy is a phenomenal driver for economies all across the world. And here's one concern that we have with the gas line, and that is I think people have an expectation it's going to deliver low-cost gas. And we tried, you know, Governor Dunleavy came out and said, oh, it's going to be $12 gas in phase one, and which is the in-state portion, and $5 gas in phase two. Well, we put it in the statute and said, okay, here's the promises that you're making. Let's put it in statute. And guess what? Glenfarne objected and the governor objected. And so, you know, you got Governor Dunleavy's energy advisor, Andrew Jensen, out there saying, it's going to be $5 gas. Well, let's put it in statute. And they object to it. Because what the numbers show is it's not going to be $5 gas. It's not going to be $12 gas. In phase one, right now you're paying in Anchorage $10.80, peak $13. In phase one of this project, it's going to be over $22 gas, okay?
I thought they'd agreed to $16.
16 plus, read the fine print. 16 plus inflation. And then you have to add on NSTAR's delivery costs. Okay, so when you factor that all out, you figure, well, what's the standard inflation expectation? About 2%, 2.5%. You add on another $4.36 for NSTAR's delivery charges. It's not $16 gas. It's more like $22.06 gas at a minimum. And that's best case scenario.
But what would imported gas come in at?
17. So are you willing to pay $5 more for your gas because it's Alaskan gas. Now, look, I'm not advocating for importing gas at all. I'm just saying, you know, a lot of promises are being made by people, and a lot of people are getting the expectation like, oh, we're going to have this really low-cost gas, and that's just not the case. And we're trying to protect. That's what we're trying to do in the Senate version. We're trying to protect. We're trying to hold people to their promises that they're making, and that's what they're objecting to. The poison pills that they keep referring to are protections for Alaskans, protection like against cost overrun, against liability, against things like that, against ripping away Alaska labor provisions. And so these are the things we did in the Senate that they're now claiming are poison pills. Those are protections for Alaskans.
Representative McCabe.
Yeah, so let's talk about imported gas a little bit, Lori. So if you look at John Sims' testimony in front of, I think it was House Finance, where he talked about 17, I think he agreed on the price of 16. That's the actual price agreement. But also all the things that that Bill just mentioned that are going to be layered on top, NSTAR's fees, transportation fees, dockage fees, all of that bumps that price up to about 23 in MCF. So a lot of it depends, though, on where you start. Do you start with Henry Hub pricing as your estimate, or do you start with JKM pricing as your, you know, as your base? Or how about, you know, Canada? How about, what is it, Calgary Hub? Where are we starting? So you can throw these numbers around all you want, but at the end of the day, we have 35 trillion CFS, you know, trillion cubic feet on the North Slope that we know is there. We just need to access it. Frankly, importing gas from Canada, which is probably going to come from the Kitimat field, is going to be as expensive, if not more expensive, than this gas pipeline. So, you know, the other thing that that concerns me that I heard Bill say, when you put a price cap in statute, you might as well put a clause in statute that says, I'm sorry, Mr. Lender and Mr. Venture Capitalist, we don't want this project. So in my opinion, something Speaker Gingrich once told me in a meeting was, you need to start with yes, but, instead of no, because. So it seems to me the Senate bill is saying no because we don't have the labor agreements, or you haven't agreed on this, or you haven't agreed on that, or you haven't put a price cap in statute, which is a wacky way, if you ask me, of doing business, is statutizing price caps. There's a no because in there. We need to start with a yes, but. Yes, Glenfarne, you can come build a pipeline. You can get gas to Alaskans, cheaper or less expensive gas to Alaskans than importing, but we need this and we need this. Let's start with yes, but, instead of no, because.
All right, let's go back to the phones for a moment. Tom is in Hoonah. Hi, Tom. We're running out of time, so please get to your question quickly. Hello? Okay, moving on. Here's an email question. Would it make economic sense to build a smaller gas line that meets Alaska's needs with a small surplus to sell outside? The gas would then last for centuries. So I think that's just basic economics. It's just too expensive.
It just doesn't really pencil economically.
Yeah, that's an easy answer there. Let's go back to the phones for a moment. Tom is in Juneau. Hello. Please get your question
good
quickly.
Morning. Thanks for taking the call. I'll be very brief. It's a great discussion. I'm not a petroleum guy, but I, as far as I can determine, and I have looked, Alaska is the only government oil regime in the world that no sooner is the ink dry on a term sheet, on a lease, on a contract, than, in this case, the Alaska legislature starts worrying that there's going to be too much profit made by the other party. And in that environment, is it any wonder that potential lenders, potential investors, even potential LNG buyers would want to get locked in as best as they could to the terms and want some kind of guarantees up front? And that's my question. Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, Tom.
Well, Senator? Thank you. Appreciate the question. There's a few different ways I can answer that, and it seems to be this theme of instability in Alaska. Let me tell you about some of the other places that the oil companies invest in worldwide. They invest in places like Venezuela, where Hugo Chavez increased their taxes to 90% and expropriated their assets. They invest in places like Libya, where there's a civil war and their taxes were increased to 90%. They invest in places like Russia, where Vladimir Putin increased their taxes to 90% and expropriated their assets. They don't invest there anymore. There's sanctions, but from the United States. They invest in places like Nigeria, where they're blowing up pipelines. Bolivia, where their government has expropriated their assets. They invest in places like the Middle East, where government take is 99%. They invest in places like Norway, where the government take is 78%. In Alaska, our government take, our taxes combined, royalties and corporate income taxes, is around 16% of the gross, okay? So when people say Alaska is an unstable place to do business, that is a fundamentally wrong. It's just completely wrong. It's kind of absurd, actually.
I have a question, and Representative McCabe, I want to give you a chance to weigh in here too, but I have a question about, there's been sort of this big unknown about what exactly will this line cost, the two phases. There was some information that was sort of released through a side door that it would be about $55 billion. But it's an unknown. Why doesn't the legislature commission its own independent cost analysis to have a better understanding of what this really would take to get this done? Why isn't that happening? Representative McCabe, I'll let you pick it up there.
Yeah, so that's a good question. And once again, we are dealing with a private business, and we don't know, frankly. We don't, and he doesn't want to tell us right now because that's information that he is working with financiers and venture capitalists with. So a certain amount of that is close hold, and he's offered many, many times to allow us to sign NDAs so we could better understand it, because frankly, that's sort of our job, is understanding things as they go forward. And I get why he's sort of keeping a close hold, because he's negotiating with different suppliers, different builders, different contractors. And on the other side, on the upside, he's negotiating with different countries to sell the stuff. And as far as your caller's concerned, Tom from Juneau, they, of course, the people that are buying gas, they want to lock us into a certain, or lock Glenfarne into a certain price. But remember, it has to get financing first. And the finance people need to get an understanding that the legislature is not going to put the brakes on this program after they have lent the money and Glenfarne has started construction, and all of a sudden the legislature says, oh, there was a cap on that, can't do that. So we need to make sure that we can get the financing done first, and then all of those other, sales caps or the structured sales and the guaranteed cost for sales, all of those kind of come into place. So it's a little frustrating to hear Bill say that Alaska is not a stable place to do business, because it's not a stable place to do business, frankly, or to say it is a stable place, because it's not. All of those other countries that he mentioned where oil companies are investing, they're different than Alaska. They're not America. Let's compare Alaska to Texas or Louisiana or other places that the oil companies invest in America that use American law, have American security, American courts. Those are the places we need to be comparing ourselves to, not to Russia and Qatar and all the other places. All of those places have some form of government subsidy, government intervention, and the oil companies know that they go in there. When they go in there, they know that. The difference is, let's compare to U.S. companies.
All right. We are almost out of time here, but I wanted to get to one more question. Senator Wilkowski, we saw House Majority Leader Chuck Kopp stand up next to the governor last month, says he hopes lawmakers could get to a point where this bill wasn't a vehicle for expanding corporate income taxes. And you probably need his vote to get to a majority in the 21-19 House. Do you think a pass-through entities tax could ever even pass the House?
I can't answer that question. I would hope so. I think it's something that we need. Look, we've got to fund our government. We have education. People want a bigger PFD, and you can't keep giving away our resources and continue to afford to pay for the things that Alaskans need.
You both see this so fundamentally differently. Are you optimistic that an agreement can really come out of all of this? Representative McCabe. About 20 seconds?
Well, I would say, sure, I would say that if we don't get the project built, the same event happens. So if we don't get the project built, there will be no money to fund education. There will be no money to fund the PFD. So the objective of this bill is to get the project built. 100% tax of zero is still zero. So let's get the project built first, and let's figure out the how we're going to fund government after the money is flowing, because right now it looks like it is not going to go anywhere. So,
all right, that's all the time we have. Thank you to our guests today, Senator Bill Willikowski and Representative Kevin McCabe. Thanks to our team, Crystal Hyde, our engineer, our producer is Emily Messner, our editor is Annie Feit. On the phones, Ava White helped us out. I'm Lori Townsend. We'll be back next week. Thanks for listening.
Talk of Alaska is a production of Alaska Public Media, which is solely responsible for its content. Views expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of Alaska Public Media, this station, or its underwriters. Today's program is available online at alaskapublic.org. This is Alaska Public Media.